everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cape Chronicles. We are recording episode 81. And today we're going to be talking about The Amazing Spider-Man. But before we get to that, I know that this is not Mike's voice. You are correct. This is Andrea, one of your co-hosts. Unfortunately, Mike was unable to make it today, and I think he did that on purpose. So you guys can definitely email him and let him know your displeasure in him not being here. Just kidding, don't do that. But two amazing hosts that are here are Carrie and Fred. Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I had my first Aikido seminar in like over 2 years last weekend, and it took me a few days to recover, but now I am back to, you know, full fighting form. Unfortunately, there was a minor heat wave the last few days. It's been a bazillion degrees.
Really?
It's 82 right now, but it got up to like it got up to about 100 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, that's kind of concerning because it's only April. Like, I wonder how it's going to be in the summer. I don't know.
I hope not, but, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, this climate change is a you know, liberal hoax and stuff. So we're all lying our pants off about that.
The climate is not changing, Carrie. It is just your perception.
Well, technically, it is changing.
Climate changes all the time.
No, it doesn't change. It's always the same. Uh-huh.
And I wonder whose voice that is. Fred, how are you? I haven't seen you in a while. Just kidding.
Wow, just looked to your right. We're doing pretty good. I'm pretty happy. Like, it's what day is it? Today is a Saturday.
Today's Saturday, all day.
9th of April. We are what, 6 days from vacation.
Oh, so excited.
Ooh.
Super excited.
Where are you guys going?
We booked a flight to Hawaii. We'll be there for 11 days. And then I just realized that my flight is actually at 6 a.m. So,
oh boy.
Whoops. And but okay, we'll deal with it.
The authorities
don't like the idea of you going on vacation and that fire engine siren is like dying. So, I apologize.
We cannot hear it through the...
You can't hear it? Okay.
Okay.
It was, so that, like, that,
ignore
it was
that my bad. Ignore my ranting, then.
So, yeah, we need to be up at 3 a.m. on Thursday to make our flight, because we...
We're smart.
You planned poorly?
We planned poorly. Well, no, we planned well, and then realized that it was probably... Yeah. It's okay.
You planned poorly.
Sure.
More excited, so that's pretty awesome. So when it comes to network announcements, like just regular kind of thing, you can follow us on social media, especially on Twitter. You can find me at Katz Bears. That's KatzBearz. Carrie, where can they find you?
You can find me at Carrie Blackfire 42. That's K-E-R-I Blackfire 42. Oh, and Mike is not on the Twitterverse anymore, so you can't find him.
But he is on Discord.
He is.
Yes. And Fred, where can they find you?
Well, next week you can find me at Waikiki Beach. That's somewhere in Honolulu.
Don't tell people!
I mean, it's a big beach. You can look for us. We'll have a beer with you. If you want to find me on Twitter, though, it's Freddy One Kenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi.
All right. So let's kick this show on the run, or kick the show on the run. I don't know how it goes.
Kick it while it's down.
No. Oh dear.
No,
we are.
Kick Peter Parker when he's down.
No, because Peter Parker suffering. We can't. I refuse to add to Peter Parker's suffering, even though Peter Parker suffers a lot.
He does.
He does. It's like a constant thing. But to correct Andrea's opening, this is actually The Amazing Spider-Man 2 from May 2nd, 2014. And the summary of this movie, we've always known that Spider-Man's most important conflict has been within himself, the struggle between the ordinary obligations of Peter Parker and the extraordinary responsibilities of Spider-Man. But in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Peter Parker finds that his greatest battle is about to begin. It's great to be Spider-Man. For Peter Parker, there's no feeling quite like swinging through skyscrapers, embracing being the hero, and spending time with Gwen. But being Spider-Man comes at a price. Only Spider-Man can protect his fellow New Yorkers from formidable villains that threaten the city. With the emergence of Electro, Peter must confront a foe far more powerful than he is. And as his old friend Harry Osborn returns, Peter comes to realize that all of his enemies have one thing in common: Oscorp.
All right. So when it comes to distributor, it's Sony Pictures releasing. The runtime is 141 minutes. Apparently for Fred, it was way too long, but I think it was because of the amount of times we paused it. It's rated PG-13. It was released May 2nd, 2014. The budget was $200 million. Worldwide gross was $708.9 million. And in terms of Rotten Tomatoes scores, critics certified it at 51%, so not really the freshest. And audience score was 64. So the audience enjoyed it a little bit more than the critics.
Barely more. But hey, let's go through the cast and crew. The director was Mark Webb, who also did The Amazing Spider-Man, and is also slated to do Snow White next year in 2023. The actors, obviously, we have Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man / Peter Parker. Emma Stone was Gwen Stacy. Sally Field as Aunt May. Campbell Scott as Richard Parker. Dennis Leary as Captain Stacy, but he was uncredited. For new cast, we have Jamie Foxx as Electro / Max Dillon. He was also Ray Charles in Ray. Excellent movie. And Django in Django Unchained. There was Colm Feore as Donald Milken. He also played Reginald Hargreaves in The Umbrella Academy and King Laufey in Thor. There's also Dane DeHaan as Green Goblin / Harry Osborn or Super Emo Man. He's also Lucien Carr in Kill Your Darlings. Paul Giamatti as Aliski Savetch. Setsuvich, sorry, or / Rhino. Oh, I hated this guy. loved this guy. And he also played Nathan in Gunpowder Milkshake and Nilo in Jungle Cruise. Felicity Jones, one of her favorites. She played Felicia. Felicia.
And there's a theory going around that this was actually Felicia Hardy, who would have been eventually Black Cat. If they ever get around to Black Cat. By the way, I just want to put that out there. In case any of the Guardians of the MCU are listening, I think it's highly past time that we get a Felicia Hardy in the Spider-Man movies. So someone cast a kick-ass Black Cat and get on that.
And I would be very happy to see Felicity Jones fill that role. Of course, she also played Jyn Erso in Rogue One and Jane Hawking in The Theory of Everything. And last but not least, we had Chris Cooper as Norman Osborn, also uncredited. He also played Douglas in Where the Wild Things Are and Conklin in The Bourne Identity.
All right, so here's some behind-the-scenes and trivia-type stuff. Shailene Woodley was actually cast as Mary Jane Watson and even filmed a few scenes, but her role was cut from the film because the filmmakers felt there were too many characters and wanted to streamline the series. Completely understandable.
I agree.
I actually kept waiting for her to show up, and then I was like, yeah, no, we don't need her yet. That probably would have been Amazing Spider-Man 3.
I think it would have been too soon to show her when Gwen dies. Go for the next person.
It's only been 5 months. At the end of the movie. So yeah,
I'm glad that they did that.
I'm glad that they didn't. They cut her out. This is the first Spider-Man film to be filmed entirely in New York State, and the largest film production ever in New York City, which is very cool. Stan Lee sighting at around 14 minutes, a guest at the graduation who sees mm-hmm. Peter in his cap and gown but wearing the Spider-Man mask and says, I think I know that guy, as well as he should, since he's the one who came up with the idea for the character.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. When Sony Columbia Films was shown in theaters, a mid-credit teaser for Fox's X-Men Days of Future Past, produced by 20th Century Fox, was included. Director Mark Webb violated his contract with Fox to make a film for them after The Amazing Spider-Man from 2012, in order to return to Sony for this franchise. Thus, Sony had to agree to promote Fox's X-Men movie for free.
Oh, wow.
Nice cross-promotion. I dig it. The scene, unfortunately, was not included in the video release, and this is unusual for a mid-credit scene teaser, in that it is actual footage from the film. It is promoting a scene from Vietnam with Stryker and Mystique, if you guys have seen Days of Future Past. You know which scene I'm talking about, or one of the scenes.
Yes.
The humorously hateful news boss, J. Jonah Jameson, one of the most iconic characters in Spider-Man's mythos, was never mentioned in The Amazing Spider-Man from 2012. In this sequel, he is spoken of frequently but never appears. The producers claimed that they could not find an actor to measure up to J.K. Simmons' legendary portrayal of this character as is completely 100% correct.
Yeah.
They could not find someone to live up to his portrayal of the character in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man films. Stan Lee, the writer who came up with the idea for these characters and makes a cameo appearance in all the films, has often said that he would volunteer to play Jameson if he were 30 to 40 years younger.
Aww.
Aw. Ironically, when casting Spider-Man Far From Home in 2019, they could think of no one better to play the role than J.K. Simmons, who resumed the role as Jameson. To much applause.
Of course. Yeah,
he plays him phenomenally.
He can continue to play J. Jonah Jameson as much as he wants, for as long as he wants. It's completely fine. When the reporter is interviewing two bystanders after Spider-Man's first battle with Electro, they speculate that Spider-Man defeated him by wearing a rubber neoprene suit, which is how Spider-Man defeated Electro in the comic book. The end credits tease at a canceled spin-off film, Sinister Six. The credits show schematics for Dr. Octavius's tentacles, Rhino's armor, Vulture's wings, Kraven's logo, Green Goblin's guider, and Mysterio, or the Chameleon's mask. And then some casting notes. Jean Jardin, Mads Mikkelsen, and Damian Lewis were all considered for the part of Electro.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting.
Yes. All right. So let's break this down.
All right.
What do you guys think? You're gonna make me sad, aren't you?
Okay. So the very, very first opening scene where they were in the plane with Peter's father, I thought that scene was quite good, and I was getting excited for this movie. And then they went into that second scene with that one guy, I forget his name now.
Rhino. He ends up becoming Rhino.
The whole thing fell apart for me, and I just wanted to shut the
door. The beginning scene was awesome, and I like that they work to incorporate more of Richard Parker and Peter's mom into the story this time around. I really like the way that was going, and if that was going to continue. I just appreciated the sheer joy Andrew Garfield put into Spider-Man swinging through New York. I thought that was just awesome.
So to me, the special effects that were in that scene and many of the other scenes that we see later didn't really seem like it was live action. It seemed more like it was a video game.
Mm-hmm. I can kind of see that, but I didn't care. I like the graphics, so I was
fine
with it.
Which is fine if that's the look that they were going for, but it just felt out of place to me, like if I was playing this as a video game. And if that was the look they were going for, they hit it, but it didn't really resonate personally with me.
Okay.
I think that one of the areas that I wish they could have done a little bit more or polished it was just in the writing. There are sometimes the jokes, like, didn't really land. But Andrew Garfield, like, I really enjoy some of the aspects that he brings to Spider-Man. He can be witty. I love how loving he can be in character. Yeah. There's a lot of scenes with Aunt May. I mean, like, that moment at the very end when he's crying, holding Gwen, like, I had to look away because I didn't want to cry. But, like, yeah. he does have those moments that are very impactful. But I think that there were times, not because of him, but there was just some times that the delivery and, like, the writing was just too comical for how dark this movie gets.
Well, Spider-Man was kind of like the comic relief.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of really bad stuff happening to him, but he could still, like, have a witty comeback, which I appreciate. I mean, this is the kind that I have, and this is the smart-ass Spider-Man that would be working with Deadpool.
Yes.
I completely agree.
I completely agree with that. So
this is the Spider-Man Deadpool team up I want. As much as I love Tom Holland in the role, this is what I want for Spider-Man and Deadpool teaming up together.
Oh, love it. So outside of that initial scene with the Rhino guy, Alexei, I think his name was.
Alexei. But anyway,
Alexei, sorry. Once we got past that, things got better, except for Norman Osborn. Sorry.
Yeah, Norman was... I mean, you kind of get it when you see his dad and the, you know, complete jerk his dad was to him, but
Harry Osborn.
Harry was the son.
The emo guy.
Norman was a piece of work, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't handle Harry.
Yeah.
Anytime that he was in the scene or Green Goblin was in the scene, it was just he is no William Dafoe.
Mm-hmm.
No, of course he's not going to be William Dafoe, but I like that they were trying to center everything around Oscorp.
Yeah,
and I don't know that they necessarily needed one of the Osborns to be in the movie per se. I think it almost works that Harry is a friend of his, it works that Peter would think to reach out to Harry when his dad dies, and that is really cool. And Harry starts out being almost okay, but Norman says early on that you have the same genetic condition and you're going to die too. I wasn't expecting that to start so quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and I'm going to use that as a segue here. I think they should have saved that moment for the next movie.
Yeah.
And remove Green Goblin from this movie. They should have just used Harry as an auxiliary piece and focus primarily.
Yeah.
Sorry, not acceleration, but
accessory.
Accessory piece.
Okay.
Focus solely on Electro. I think that would have simplified the movie a lot, and I think that would have given it better focus, and I think it would have been a stronger movie overall.
Yeah, if they had slowed down the genetic disease, I guess he got from his father, and made it not so rapid, I think it might have been better. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Even if that still happened and he injected himself and we saw that happening, but saved it for an unfinished
tease
for the next movie, sure, I would have taken that and just pocketed that for a future story, but I think they should just focus on Electro. There was a lot of really good things happening there, and I think we lost focus, and he didn't get the due that he needed, in my opinion.
I think that Electrode was treated by the writers the same way that he felt like he was being treated. Like he was a nobody.
Like a second-class citizen.
Yeah. Like he just, he didn't eventually matter in the grand scheme of things. And I think that this was a person who was like mentally disturbed. Like you do see that when he's like pretending that he's friends with Peter in his apartment and he has a cutout of him. Like, I wish that they could have done a little bit more with that. Instead,
yeah, he definitely has like a stalker
going on. So I think that it would have been much more interesting for him to have been the cause of Gwen's death than just using Harry as that propeller.
Except that I think they, because... And the reason why it's one of my least favorite scenes is because it's hard to watch and because it is and because it mirrors so closely to what actually happened in the comics. Yeah. except that it was Norman Osborn, not Harry, I believe, that threw Gwen off a bridge in the comics, and Peter catches her, but the sudden stop breaks her neck.
I think that it was a very well done scene.
Uh-huh.
And it's so hard to watch because you can hear that moment where like her head connects to the concrete. Yeah. And like it gives me the chill. So I think that it was beautifully done, but it's super tragic.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate the scene for what it was. Uh-huh. I just didn't resonate well with Gwen, and I think they should have focused or rewritten her a little bit more to make the audience appreciate her even more. Maybe it's just me, maybe it's my point of view, I don't know, but I just felt like I wasn't sold
deeply
on her
affected.
I didn't really care for her as a character, so when that happened I was like,
fast forward to, you guys have seen No Way Home, right?
Of course.
Fast forward to last December, and suddenly that
rings
scene
a little differently.
Rings a little more, little differently, and suddenly it's like, oh God.
I think that this, like, the moment in this movie, after seeing the latest Spider-Man movie, just has such a deeper meaning, and I think that's something that maybe Fred like misses, because he never watched The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and he just went into Spider-Man.
Maybe let's back up a little bit here. We never really talked about our first experiences that Mike usually brings up. When did we first watch this? And so I watched the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, and then and I watched all the cartoons when I was growing up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when The Amazing Spider-Man came out just a few years later, and then some of my friends went and saw it and said, it's terrible, don't even bother. I never did. I never watched either of the
Andrew Garfield ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I mentioned this when we did Amazing Spider-Man 1. This was a movie I went to see partly because I wanted to see it and partly to hide from the heat because it was the middle of summer and you know, I could, you know, pay, you know, $10 to go sit in a cold theater for a couple of hours and not have to worry about, my power bill. I don't remember why I didn't see the second one in the theaters. I think I just didn't have time or money at that time, but I did eventually pick up the DVD in the nearly free DVD bin at like Best Buy or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I got my hands on Amazing Spider-Man 2 and both of the Ghost Rider movies. So yeah. So that's how I eventually watched it on DVD. Which I never disliked I kind of get some of the criticisms, but I never really, I don't get the hate for it. And I didn't think it was, you know, I don't think it's the worst movie ever. And
no,
I would
not at all.
And I would like to I know we're going to get to this eventually when we get to our Rotten Tomatoes says, but I would like to respectfully disagree with one of the quotes we will eventually get to and say that I would watch this over Batman and Robin in a heartbeat.
It has good
You're
moments.
You're not wrong.
Like, it has good moments, but so I had watched it with my parents because, I mean, Spider-Man, it's easy, lighthearted, yeah. And this was not easy and lighthearted. I think that this is one of those movies that it was a fun watch, but I wouldn't watch again because of how dramatic it is. Like,
right,
it's just too emotional. And like, that's not really what I sort of want from, like, these Marvel movies. I appreciate how different it is from the other ones. And, like, I never expected for Gwen to die. And when she does, it's, like, super tragic. And, I mean, Peter is to blame. Like, he broke a promise, and he sees the repercussions.
But it was also her choice.
Yes,
it was.
That's
yes.
True. But I think that just that moment, it's so difficult for me to watch that movie just because I know what's coming, and I've always hated that scene.
No, I understand. Because I knew some of the history of Gwen Stacy, I knew that was going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So I was prepared. I was semi-prepared for that when I eventually saw the movie. I just really appreciated how kind Spider-Man was in this, and how
he was taking
care of the kids. He was, you know, taking care of the bullies for that one kid and fixing his wind turbine, which Mike's notes was that was like one of his favorite scenes. What Mike said, I love that scene. And just the, like I said, just the sheer joy he gets from swinging through the building cityscape in New York is just, that's awesome. I like, he still finds, even, you know, it takes him a few months to get back to that after Gwen dies, but, you know, he still manages to find that joy in just, you know, being in the city and swinging from building to building. And that is just, I think that, along with Peter and, well, Gwen seeing the crap out of everything, was one of those things I found I missed with the last iteration of Spider-Man.
I agree. I think that the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man took kind of like a darker turn and a more serious tone. Not as serious as this movie, but I think that this Spider-Man
serious in a different way.
Yeah,
I think that this Spider-Man was more upbeat, it's a nice bridge between Tobey Maguire and Tom Holland. Yes, he's that in between character of what he could have been.
Well, and also, I mean, it's easier to remember in this iteration of Spider-Man that Peter really is an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah.
During these two movies. So,
and it's easier to see that. Versus
it's easier to
Tobey
see
Maguire.
That. He looks more, he looks like he should be in high school than Tobey Maguire ever did when he was playing Spider-Man. So, the casting for, you know, looking the part, at least they got that right this time.
But I will say that the latest Spider-Man movie elevates not the movies themselves, but the different Spider-Mans.
I agree.
I learned to love, like, Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man so much more because of what they did in the latest movie.
Oh yeah. It's like we will get to Far From Home.
I'm so excited.
Or No Way Home eventually. If no one's seen No Way Home by now, you really should, especially mm-hmm. if you've been watching Spider-Man since, you know, the first Tobey Maguire movie. I mean, the No Way Home is like this closure to like 19 years of Spider-Man movies, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that another thing that I enjoyed with this movie is the humor that Gwen sometimes brought. There's like that moment where they're walking around and they're talking about what things they shouldn't do now that they're quote unquote friends.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
And I thought it was really cute because he was like, oh, don't do that thing with your nose. And she's like, what are you talking about? And she does it. And I think that those are like cute little moments, and she knows how to play that like goofy girl. And I like Emma Stone is like really like just kind of like the goofy character. And then that moment where like he spider webs her arm to the back of the police car and she screams Peter and she shuts herself off. I just, those little moments like did make some of the scenes. I found myself like laughing. Or when she sees in the bridge the I love you, and she's like, oh, that was for me, like I didn't see that. And he's like, are you sure you didn't see it? It's like, oh yeah.
it was
the awesome. Hood of the car, by the way.
I really like that they were alluding to the Sinister Six. I love that they were trying to get there. I like that they've been trying to get a Sinister Six movie off the ground for so long, and they never seemed to get there. And even you know, Morbius was supposed to be another jumping off point for that, I think. And well, that.
It doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere.
No, it doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere either. Which is sad. It's like... Although, maybe if all the side characters start to fail, not that I want them to, maybe that will finally convince Sony to, you know, either sell Spider-Man back to Marvel or just, you know, collaborate with Marvel... like whole hog and not try to, you know, play by themselves anymore.
I think there's a real opportunity to do these Sinister Six movies, even if they licensed it back to Marvel and they took a cut. I mean, I think we're all on board seeing more Spider-Man and more content. Like, why not?
Yeah, why not? And
the latest movie of Spider-Man showed me that I can still watch some Spider-Man. They just gave me the three of them, though.
And the Marvel-Sony relationship seems to be working for them and their current model, so maybe there's a future opportunity here. So
Yeah, just, you know, Sony, stop trying to do things solo, because I love both Venom movies. But you do so much better when you have Marvel Studios helping you out. So just, you know, buck up and
well, even just having the inclusion of the Marvel characters that they can't leverage without that partnership, I think that really helps.
Oh yeah, I agree. So, did you guys have a favorite or least favorite moment? Anytime Harry was on the screen.
I mean, emo Harry.
Ugly.
Emo Harry
was really hard to look at. That opening sequence with the Rhino character, I thought was really hard. I even didn't like the Rhino character at the end, except for that scene with the little kid who stepped forward.
That was great. That was great.
I mean, that was probably the strongest moment of the whole movie, in my opinion. Again, I didn't like the video game appearance of all the special effects. I really wanted to see it more as of live action special effects, but it was too gamey.
I had no problem with that. I think it's hard to do. We've come a long way in the last 8 years, and obviously there's no secret about, you know, Electra makes an appearance in No Way Home, and they did improve the look of the character.
He looked clunky, yeah.
But yeah, I think there was really no way to do that character the way they were trying to make him look, mm-hmm. and not make it look kind of video gamey. So I was mostly fine with it.
Yeah, to me, it felt like it was a distinct decision to go for a video game aspect to it. Maybe in release with the Spider-Man video game that was coming out as well. So
maybe
it had to do something with that. I don't know, but
I think the worst part of this movie was that bass in all the music. It gave me so much anxiety throughout the whole entire movie. And I was like, why am I feeling like my heart rate is increasing? And I don't like it.
That's just your stereo.
Yeah,
no.
That might be just your stereo.
It wasn't.
I had no problems with the bass.
Oh, I just know the dun, 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 dun. I was like, no, we need to stop this.
That's our big subwoofer.
I also, unfortunately, like Electrode, I think that again he could have been developed a lot more, and I wish they would have. I felt like, oh, he just like puffed and died, and that's the end of it, and like nobody cares about.
Well, considering that he's made of electricity, I didn't think that he was well and truly dead. I think he's probably gonna. I think that if the series of movies had continued, he might have shown up again.
Yeah,
I think what it really came down to is that they killed him off, per se, just to get Green Goblin's finishing act into the story.
Yeah.
And again, when I go back to my earlier point, was they should have just saved the Green Goblin storyline for another movie.
Mm. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite character?
Oof.
But Andrea, you had something to say first.
Oh, no, I was going to ask, like, what was your favorite moment?
Oh, my favorite moment? I just loved Spidey being a complete smartass. Mm-hmm. Where was that Spider-Man, you know, back in the Tobey Maguire era? It's where were the witty comebacks and just the, you know, smartass comments?
And what was your least favorite moment?
Other than Harry, anytime Harry was on the screen, just watching Gwen's death was really hard.
Yeah, I agree. Gwen's death, there's only so many times I can watch that, and I think it's very tragic. Again, very well shot, but too much for me. I think that the actor who plays Harry, he has a very creepy vibe to him.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, it works for a bad guy. We watched him in the Chronicle movie, and he did pretty good as the Apex Predator.
Oh, that's who that was.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I
completely blanked that movie from my mind. It was like,
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
I know you did. I had no idea what we were watching.
Yeah.
She enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah. But yeah, so I agree with that. All right. So, any quotes that you guys like? I like that specific moment where Gwen yells Peter and she kind of regrets it. I thought it was a really funny moment.
Yeah.
I mean, Laundry Sheriff, I think that was one of the quotes.
Yeah.
A god named Sparkles?
Yeah.
I'm Spider-Bad.
I'm so, yeah. It's terrible.
Well, Well, he had a cold.
He's so cute.
He's running himself ragged. Yeah. Did your traffic jam have anything to do with, I don't know, being shot at by machine guns?
Maybe.
Maybe. On behalf of the fine people of New York and real rhinos everywhere, I ask you to put your mechanized paws in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was good.
All right. Anything else in terms of this movie?
I mean, so we had Felicity Jones. She played Jyn Erso. So Star Wars, we already have that one crossover.
Okay.
And we have Electro, who is very similar in powers to the Emperor.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we have some Star Wars.
So it is a strong, the Force is strong with this movie.
So where would you put this movie in the whole scheme of Star Wars? I'm just kidding. Don't answer that.
In the Star Wars? No. It's a movie.
Yeah.
All right. So when it comes to plot holes and goofs, so character errors, it is extremely unlikely that Peter, who is incredibly intelligent and has invented the web shooters on his own, would have to watch a YouTube video to teach him that batteries can explode if they are overloaded. I can overlook that. I think
that was more for teaching the audience, but yes.
Maybe, yeah. I think you might be right about that, Fred.
All right, continuity. When Aunt May is talking to Peter about doing the washing, she is holding a sandwich with lots of lettuce leaves sticking out of the top. She passes it to Peter, and the next shot shows him holding the sandwich, but it has no salad leaves off any sort. And it's interesting that she said, like, here's your breakfast. I was like, there's a lot of lettuce for breakfast right there.
You know, he has to make the eat his greens somehow. Although I figured
it was an egg sandwich.
Although, you know, I think they hinted at her suspecting that he was Spider-Man in the last movie. And I guess maybe either they forgot about that in this movie, or he just hasn't come out and said it, so she's not, you know, letting on that she knows or suspects. Mm.
Oh, I found that scene where he's like, I'm naked, Aunt May, don't come into my room, and it was so awkward. I was like, if I was her, I would not go into that room. Like, your child tells you that they're naked? You stay far away from that.
My mom would have just barged in anyway.
Yeah, so. Hispanic moms are the same way. They have no sense of, like, what a knock is, but...
Yeah.
All right, so... when Spider-Man talks to Max after saving him, he holds up his left hand and says, lick that. In the next shot, he is holding up his right hand and his left hand is on Max's shoulder. Huh. Mm. Electrode has a control chip placed on the right side of his head. However, during the end of the power plant battle, the chip has switched to the left side of his head.
I just figured maybe there was a chip on both sides, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
I was trying to be generous about it.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe.
Just before Peter listens to his headphones on his bed, he throws his suit onto a briefcase. Suddenly, the suit is gone, and the briefcase was turned 90 degrees. I mean, he does have spiderweb slingy abilities. He might have just moved it by accident. Crew and equipment visible. When Harry Osborn and Peter Parker are walking through the park, the camera crew and Boom are reflected in Harry's mirrored sunglasses. Oh, I want to see that. Mm. Errors in geography. When on the phone with Gwen while running late for his graduation, Spider-Man tells her his rapidly changing location is 1st and Broadway, 2nd and Broadway, 3rd and Broadway. In Manhattan, Broadway does not intersect with 1st or 2nd Street. And then the globe structures at the top of the Brooklyn Bridge that Peter and Gwen stand atop do not exist on the bridge in real life. I mean, I can live with that. Like, there might be differences in their world.
True.
Factual errors. When Spider-Man is trying to regain control of the plutonium 238 shipment An onboard computer warns that the plutonium is highly explosive. Plutonium 239, however, is known. Sorry, 238 is known for not being fissible.
Fissile,
huh?
Yeah.
New word for me. Instead, it is used for radioisotope thermoelectric generators because its short half-life makes it release enough energy to stay constantly hot.
AKA, it's bad for
fusion
bombs. What was that? I couldn't hear you, Fred. You're muted.
I was muted because I was coughing. Okay. Sorry, yes. Plutonium 238 is not good for a fusion bomb.
Interesting. Incorrectly regarded as goofs. Gwen reminds Peter to join her family for dim sum at 8 p.m. in the evening. Dim sum is normally only served in the mornings and at lunch, not as dinner. However, there is no reason for a restaurant which caters for Western diners to rigorously follow Chinese traditions. Yeah, I can overlook that.
Yeah, I was like, wait. Because we had this issue last week where we were trying to find a dim sum place after the seminar, and you know we got out of the seminar at like 2, and we're like, where can we get dim sum now? Okay, we found, and we ended up finding like one place in Monterey Park.
Good food. Yeah.
We used to have a restaurant here that was exclusive for dim sum, and they served it all day.
Nice.
All right. Anyways, how does Rotten Tomatoes cope
Rotten
with this
Tomatoes
movie?
Says, well, here we go. You ready? I think Carrie has some objections already.
Yes, I do.
With appalling dialogue, slapstick humor, some bizarre aesthetics, and cheesy moments aplenty, Peter's Spider-Man theme ringtone, or Electro beating Spidey up to the tune of Incy Wincy Spider, this is
like
the
that.
Batman and Robin of the Spider-Man universe.
Oh, come on. I like that. I mean, come on. Even, like, Peter had to groan at that. That was good.
That was a statement. Wow.
Wow.
All right. Next up, we have Spider-Man's new costume looks swell. And Emma Stone is charming. Those are the only two good things about The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I didn't hate with the fury anger of 1,000 exploding suns. And last but not least, we have what corporate accounting looks like in cinematic form.
Ouch.
Wow.
Wow.
Ouch. All right, so we have some... movie rating choices for this month. I only came up with two of these, and I'm guessing Fred came up with the other two.
I might have thrown in a couple comments.
That last one is just wrong. I am not using that one, Fred, because that it's still too soon.
It may be too soon, and it's been used twice now.
I know.
So the ratings that we have are 1 out of 10 burnt out web shooters. 1 out of 10 charging rhinos, 1 out of 10 emo villains, and 1 out of 10 skull crush girlfriends.
Oh.
And that's the one that...
Fred, I am so disappointed in you.
Yeah. Okay, so we can choose whichever one we want to use. Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, okay, I recognize that this is not the best movie ever. I am going to give this a 5.
Mm-hmm.
Five is still watchable. You know, not my first pick, but I still like this movie. So
it's really interesting because, like, I thought that you'd give it something higher, but I have to
agree with you. I almost went with a six, but like I'm trying to think of, I couldn't remember what I gave the first Amazing Spider-Man, which I like better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, five seems like a good, you know, middle of the road pick.
Yeah, I think that. I like my first instinctual like rating would be a 5. Mm-hmm. It's a movie like I could even go to a 4.5. Like it's a movie that I can watch, but it's not going to be the first one that I go for, because of those dark moments that it does have. Like, again, when I think about Spider-Man, I think of that wittiness that Andrew Garfield brings, but I don't want the trauma associated with Gwen's death and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Peter has lots of trauma in his life, unfortunately.
So you're both a 5 out of 10?
Yes. And Mike, is also a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Mike is a 5 out of 10. He really likes the scene where the little boy walks out and... Sorry, he really likes the scene where he walks the little boy home and inspires him. That's worth the wind generator. The payoff comes at the end when the little dude stands up to the rhino, my favorite Spider-Man payoff. That's Mike. So he's also a 5 out of 10.
Awesome. And what about you?
So I'm looking at my movies. For a 5 out of 10, I currently have Superman 2, The Punisher, Incredible Hulk, and Green Lantern. For a 4.5, I have Elektra, Spider-Man 3, Hancock, and Chronicle. I mean, I really wanted to give it a 4.5, but I think it's actually better than any of those four I just quoted. So I think I'm also going to have to give it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, so we're fives across the board. Nice.
Yeah, so 5 out of 10. I'll go with burnt out web shooters.
Oh, yeah. I can't do
crushed girlfriend skulls.
I think I agree with that. Burnt out web shooters.
Burnt out web shooters for me, too. All right. So our next movie up on the docket is going to be Son of Spider-Man. Son of Batman. Sorry.
I was like, wow, he has a child?
No. Wrong franchise. Wrong franchise. We're going back to DC. We're going to be watching Son of Batman, also known as the introduction of the insufferable Damian Wayne.
Tell me how you really feel.
I liked watching Nightwing kick Damian Wayne's ass. Even though this is a 10-year-old boy we're talking about, it's like, yeah, no.
By the way, I have some fun trivia before we continue with our closing remarks. So did you know that the next Doctor Strange movie is classified as one of Marvel's first horror movies?
I did know about that.
Did you just say that Spider-Man 2 was horrible? Because that's what I just heard.
No.
Oh, sorry. Never mind.
Doctor Strange 2. We're not talking about Spider-Man anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, Spider-Man is not a horrible movie, Fred.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said it was a horror. Hulk is a horrible movie.
It's not a horrible movie.
Use that as my reference, but yes. The Hulk number one, maybe? Number two? Maybe. Even worse?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, let's get out of here.
Yeah, Andrea, close us up.
All right, so we want to hear from you. What do you think about The Amazing Spider-Man 2? Was it as traumatizing, or did you enjoy it? What made it elevated? You can let us know at capechronicles@randomchatter.com. You can also obviously follow us on Twitter. We'll be around at Random Chatter, at Cape Chronicles, and
we already gave our handles at
the beginning of the show. Yeah, and our social media handles, which we said at the very beginning of the show. You can also find us all on Discord. Our Discord, sometimes we'll be there. We're always watching and listening to what other people talk about. It's not just about Cape Chronicles and superheroes. We talk about much more. And it would be extremely awesome if you guys could spread the word and support us. Leave reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere else that you listen to Cape Chronicles. And we will read it on air if you leave a comment.
And some final housekeeping items here. All the music you hear in this podcast is High Roller Mojo by Blue Stolly, and As Silly as This Sentence Sounds, all trademarks are owned by the respective owners. So thank you, and good night. Keep your stick on the ice.
Bye, guys.